ghosts, have they become a cliché? Or can we once again examine this phenomena seriously? After all, isn't it really our own afterlife we're curious about? Let's delve a little deeper on Jim Harold's Ghost Insight. Welcome to Ghost Insight. I'm Jim Harold. So glad to be with you today. And we have one of our favorite guests. Now, it's funny because we were chatting offline before we hit record, and I thought it'd been maybe a couple of years since we talked, but I guess it's been 2017, which I was surprised by. I don't know. That was a lapse on my part, but we're so glad to have back, and should have done it sooner, G. Michael Vasey, and he is the author of various books on the supernatural. And the one we're going to talk about today is called True Tales of Haunted Places, Second Edition, A Spooky Travel Guide for the Damned. And it just came out right at the, as I understand, the tail end of last year. So I think we're going to have a great time. And as I said, G. Michael Vasey has written many books. He's a collector of paranormal stories and a magician. He writes paranormal books that will keep you awake at night, poetry that will make you question reality, and books on practical magic and shamanism. He grew up experiencing ghosts and poltergeists and studied magic with a real school of hermetic scientists or sciences. And he also hosts a podcast series called The Magical World of G. Michael Vasey. We're so glad to have him on the show again. Thank you so much for joining us today. And sorry that we've been a little lapsed on our invites.
No problem. Nice to be back, and nice to be talking with you again. Yeah.
What do you think makes, this True Tales of Haunted Places, what do you think makes a good all-around haunted tale? What, when you look for a story that you think will grab people and interest people and maybe get some points across, what kind of story, what criteria do you look at?
Well, these days I'm looking for a little bit more than the usual creaks and groans and, you know, that kind of thing. And I think I've developed over the last 10 years or so, I've kind of immunized myself against most of the fear from paranormal experiences that other people have had. So I look for the ones that cause me, at least a blink. And I'm a pretty tough cookie these days, because when you get stories from everything from black-eyed kids to poltergeist and apparitions and things like that, you begin to kind of distance yourself from it. You have to, especially if you're a bit psychic. And so, the very few stories really scare me these days. So I look for the ones that give me a bit of a chill. And they don't have to be long. They can be a paragraph. Or they can be several pages of interest. I do like stories that have a bit of color and have a bit of a bit of a twist, maybe. So I look for things that just aren't the run of the mill, sleep paralysis or sort of a poltergeist, but something that has a bit more to it, a bit of color, a bit of interest, a bit of character. Does that make sense?
Makes sense to me. Now, I'm looking at the table of contents of this book, True Tales of Haunted Places, and I like how you've broken this down, different categories of kinds of places. And I love this because you have, starting out, you have places of beauty, and you have in parentheses, on the surface anyway. And the cool thing about that is that sometimes you can't necessarily judge a book by its cover. Something may look very placid and very serene, but underneath there's an undercurrent of something maybe more sinister or strange. And you have one here called the Oregon Cave dedicated to Lucifer. And I had to ask you about that one because it was such an interesting title. A cave dedicated to Lucifer. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, I can. But in terms of that kind of a place, I went a couple of summers ago to the Hellfire Caves in England. And if there was ever a cave dedicated to Lucifer, that was it. I don't know if you've ever heard of them or ever been there, but it was the Hellfire Club. Mm. And they had these caves under one of the head guy's mansion. And I went into these caves with a couple of friends who are also from the magical school that I work with. And the cave, by the time we were halfway down, I had the worst headache and felt physically sick. And all along the cave, there are devil heads carved into the wall with red painted horns and things like this. And reputedly, they used to hold the secret ceremonies down at the very end of this cave. And as you reach the end of the cave, I could barely stay in there. The atmosphere was so horrendous. So the Hellfire Caves in England are very well worth a visit if we get the chance to visit places again. This particular story I like because I am originally the Oregon Cave dedicated to Lucifer. I'm originally a geologist, so this is basically someone who's talking about being a close friend with the son of a geologist, and off they go exploring ancient caves, and they go into one which is basically Lucifer's cave, and have something of a little experience in that cave, which, not sure what the reason behind that was, but it doesn't seem like in the case of the Hellfire Caves, where it was used for black magic or ritual magic or whatever on earth went on in those caves, but certainly seems to be a place where there was some atmosphere. So they decided to do the Bloody Mary trick, the calling of the Bloody Mary. And of course, they got what they bargained for, which was a bit of a shock.
Now, that brings up a question, because I've talked to people with all different backgrounds on these shows. And one thing that I wonder about, I have my opinion, and I'm curious about yours. I'll ask people who I say, do you believe evil is real, that there's really evil in the world? And I'll get some of my, for example, my New Age friends saying, oh, no, there's no such thing as evil. There's just a lower vibration. On the other hand, I do believe in good. I believe there's a lot of good out there, but I also do believe there's evil. What do you think?
Well, I certainly believe there's evil. Absolutely there is. And I think I'm going to give you a slightly different perspective, which maybe is more of a magical perspective, that what I try to look for is the balance. Because in essence, there are really two evils at extremes. If you draw a horizontal line, and at one end you put one attribute, and at the other end you put another attribute, and let's say we're talking about cowardice and bravery. At one end of the line would be cowardice, and at the other end of the line would be foolhardiness. Now, both of those are negative traits. They're both evils, if you want to call them evil. And somewhere in the middle is the right mix of bravery. So I tend to look at the world in that way of I'm always looking for the balance between two negatives. And the negatives are basically, because we live in a duality, we live in a polar world. Everything's got two poles. And I tend to look at the poles as being the extremes and trying to find the middle ground. And it's not necessarily the middle ground. It can move around. So you're always looking for the balance. Now, I think that evil usually comes from people's lack of love. I mean, the way that people behave, the way that people have been damaged and basically take it out on other people, I think humanity is a big source of evil, because people don't take the time out to consider who they are. They don't take the time out to know themselves and to work with the faults and issues that they have. And I think we live more and more in an era where taking personal responsibility is considered somehow to be, like, along with common sense, a bit right wing. But we are responsible for ourselves. We are responsible for everything we do. And I think there's an element of evil in blaming other people for what's an obvious fault or flaw in yourself. I also think that there are entities in the reality that we live in that you could describe as being evil, because they don't have our best interests in mind. And I think we talked about black-eyed kids last time. But demons, black-eyed kids, and the old hag, and many of these type of entities, I think, have a separate reality to us. And I think that they work with negative human emotion. So they're vampiric. They feed off of fear energy. They feed off of sexual energy. They feed off of all those kind of negative traits in humans. And quite often, I think that's why you get poltergeist and similar activity around teenage, kids that are going through a sort of growing up sexually, if you want, and they've got that energy that's latent and around them, and they're lit up like a Christmas tree on the other side. So there's definitely evil, in the sense that there are entities that don't wish us well, and see us as a source of sustenance for their continued survival. I guess that's not the answer you were expecting, is it?
Maybe not the answer I was expecting, but it was certainly an answer, and it provided your perspective on it. And I do agree that there is definitely evil out there. There's so many examples of it. And there's a lot of good. I do a show called Campfire where people call in with their stories. And the thing that I try to get across is, I don't censor the stories, or I don't say only send me these kind or only send me that kind. But we get, we get a lot of the scary, spooky stories, but we get very heartwarming, very affirming stories too. And the thing is that I think that, like the quote normal life that we all live, quote, that the paranormal life that we live, the spiritual, the supernatural life, is just like our everyday life. It's a continuum. Sometimes you run into a jerk and sometimes you run into a beautiful person. And yeah. I think it's the same thing on the other side. It's not all good. It's not all bad.
I agree. Absolutely. I absolutely agree with that. There's no reason to expect it to be any other way. But I do feel that anybody who's playing with the paranormal should always be cautious and always take precautions and protect themselves, because you never know. And I have found that certain entities that don't really wish you well will come across initially as playful or even pleasant, and then they'll change on you and show their true colors. So anybody out there that's playing around, please do be careful. It can be dangerous.
Now, you say protect yourself. How so? What would you recommend?
Well, I just imagine that I'm surrounded by glowing white light, and that usually is effective. So imagine like you're just surrounded by about 2 foot of glowing light. Like there's a big, strong light bulb in your chest, and it's shining outwards. But I always also resort, from a magical point of view, to the ritual of the Les Pentagram, which is a very useful ritual that you can do on your own. It's very short. It involves a little bit of visualization. It involves visualizing the Kabbalistic cross. It involves the four points, north, south, east, and west, and the four angels that govern those points. And I've found that very effective. So, for example, about 14 years ago, when I first moved to the Czech Republic, my girlfriend and I, we bought an old apartment in an old Victorian large house. And as soon as I went in, I didn't like the atmosphere at all. But we still bought it because I figured we were going to do quite a lot of renovation work. And I figured the renovation work might clear whatever negative energy was lurking in there. It didn't, though. So I was living there, and I work at home office. I was working at one of the smaller bedrooms, and I could sense, I felt like I was being watched. I saw shadows crossing the room, this kind of thing. So I went in every room when no one else was around, and I did the pentagram ritual in every room, and that seemed to do the trick. Interestingly enough, my ex and myself, we split up about 3-4 years ago, and she'd always laughed at me that I felt like there was something, lurking in the apartment. And she just one evening surprised me with a text message. She said, "Gary, what is this?" Mm-hmm. And apparently she was hoping to sell a small coffee table. And so she'd taken a photograph with her phone of the sofa where she sits. And clear as a day was a blob of light in the shape of a person sat on the end of the sofa.
Oh, man. I guess she's not laughing at you anymore. Wow.
No, but she did. She's one of these people that couldn't care less. My daughter, on the other hand, is a bit more like me. She's a bit nervous about the dark and things that go bump in the night, and she definitely sees things, and so she has a little bit of a problem. But I think that's because that's her home and where she was raised. even though she senses something and occasionally sees something, she's not necessarily afraid of it. Whereas when she comes to my apartment, she is a little more afraid. She claims to see something here too, which I also feel, but I don't think it's right, and I don't think it's negative, so I don't have any issue with it. But she senses it, and she sees things around the place. And well, when I was her age, I was the same way. I was scared of the dark and scared of what was in the dark, and saw things and heard things that, you know, gave me a hard time growing up, as we've talked about in the past.
Yes. Now, in the book, you talk about when a home becomes a living hell. And I want to ask you this, you know, with, I think, so many of the paranormal shows, that sometimes people fall prey to the thought if they have a leaky or drippy faucet, or, you know, some floorboards creak, or they hear, you know, houses make noises, very explicable noises, that people maybe jump to the conclusion, not only that they have a ghost, that they may have a demon in their house. Yeah. But that is not to say that there aren't real cases where people have something very sinister in their homes. How do you suss that out? And when you create a section like this with these different stories, what is the criteria for that? How do we determine if something's real or just some creaky noises of an old house?
In that section, I was definitely looking for stories with heavy poltergeist activity, the kind of thing that was pretty obvious to anybody that something negative or something was going on in the home. So I picked deliberately heavy type poltergeist stories. And having experienced some light poltergeist activity myself, I have an idea of what that would look like, right? And so I picked out stories with heavy poltergeist activity, and this is back to that first question. I don't want to put in stories about creaks and groans and curtains moving around and things like that. I want the kind of story that when somebody's reading the book late at night, perhaps, which is what people tend to do, the imaginative juices start to flow, and they begin to feel deeply uncomfortable about any sound or unusual feeling that they might get reading the book. The idea is to scare people. And it's funny because in a sense, we talked about entities that live off fear and negative energy. And I realized the other day, talking to somebody, that I'm actually helping them by writing these books.
Yeah, that's the amazing thing is with the Campfire Show, for example, people will say, oh, you've helped me so much. And it's like, I've never thought about it that way. But I think people can, when they hear things and it maps to things have happened to them, they think, oh, it's not just me. And that aspect of it never really occurred to me, but that's very gratifying to hear. And I'm sure it is for you.
I say everybody's got a story. I think everybody's had an experience. Even the most hardened cynic will, if you push them and you know, in the pub maybe when they've had a couple of drinks and loosen up a bit, if everybody's talking stories, you'll find pretty much everybody has experienced something unusual, something scary, something out of the ordinary. And as I say, I think that you're probably the same as me, I would think, but you've heard so many stories. 90% of them are I've heard that a million times before. And 10% of them you go, wow.
That's what blows me away is you will hear, you think, okay, so I've been doing Campfire for 11 years. Most of those years, it's every single week. The first year or two, I think I did every other week. So I've heard hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and now thousands of stories. But and then you'll get one, oh, I've heard it all. What's this person got to say? And then they'll blow you away with a story that's like, oh my gosh. You know, something I never even considered.
I'm looking for. Yeah. Those are the ones I'm looking for. Now, you don't get many of them. So you have to include a few that are good, but not quite that good.
And again, that's not to devalue anybody's experience, because if other people have experienced something and it's relatively common, that's still powerful to you. I don't want to ever, you know, poo-poo anybody's stories. But there are certainly some that really do stand out. What, when you think about a haunted home, what would scare you most? Or what have you heard? What kind of, in the poltergeist category, what have you heard that kind of kind of set you back and made you say, oh, boy, I'm glad that never happened to me. Or maybe it did happen to you.
Well, I think anything that involves dead bodies would really freak me out. I've never seen a dead body. I'm 61 years old. I hope I never do. Dead bodies moving involuntarily or in some way would really, I think, scare the living hell out of me.
Sure.
So that's one thing. So the stories where it's been used as a funeral home or something, you know, something along those lines, and you start to get weird smells and blood stains and more bodily fluids and physical stuff, that doesn't just scare me. It makes me sick to the stomach. I also think that when I have a fear of losing control, I think many of us do.
Yes.
And the idea that I've lost control of a situation where things are flying around and I don't know what's going to happen next, I also find very frightening. And I was asked to write a foreword for a book that's coming out in a couple of weeks' time from a UK psychic medium guy. And it was amazing reading his book. It was very similar to my upbringing. I lived in a house. There was some negative energy in his house that wasn't necessarily in mine. And he had the same kind of experiences. But as I explained to him and as I was writing and as I wrote the foreword, what was different between him and me is I never had an impression of the entity. I never saw the entity. And I certainly never had any smells. And he describes this man with dirty fingernails, and rough hands, and smelly feet, and he can smell the smell of earth on his hands and smell the beer and cigarettes on the entity's breath. And to me, that little added bit of color over and above what I'd experienced made it scary as well. Do you follow me?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes.
And it seems like it was a grave digger that had lived in the house and was still there and didn't want to move on. But I found that extra sensory information a little more scary than just footsteps, groans, doors opening, things moving around. But then you add smell and sight, and it becomes almost like an overwhelming fear of what's going on, and also adds to that feeling I've lost, you're losing control. You're not in control of what's going on. And I think that makes things very scary. I tell you what I've done as well is I also wrote a book called Motel Hell. Because when I was putting this one together the first time around, I found quite a number of stories about hotel rooms. And I'd had a couple of instances myself in hotel rooms. And I had this idea one night, TripAdvisor and these websites that take reviews. I thought to myself, I wonder if people leave reviews about paranormal activity. And sure enough, I found review after review after review of hotels and boarding rooms and places like this all around the world that had these crazy reviews. And that's so I wrote this whole book. It's not very big. It's not very long, but it's a nice little read, Motel Hell. And it's reviews of hotels and motels around the world by people that have stayed in these rooms. And, okay, a lot of them are just, I woke up at 4 o'clock in the morning, the TV switched itself on. But some of the others are, I woke up listening to somebody having a shower in the bathroom. I thought it was my wife. Then I realized my wife was still laid next to me. So I get up and look in the bathroom. There's nobody there, but the light's on and there's water all over the floor. And I'm thinking, well, somebody must have walked into the room, but the door's still locked from the inside. And I go back to bed and I hear footsteps across the room and then something sits on the end of the bed and the TV comes on. And when I put the light back on, not only is the TV on, but there's a glass with whiskey in it. I mean, these kind of reviews of a hotel, can you imagine?
Yeah.
It's like, wow, what a find. So I actually put this entire book together that was just based on TripAdvisor and a couple of the other websites like that, people's reviews of haunted hotels. And the idea came from this, doing this particular book the first time around.
I won't mention the hotel because I don't think they want it mentioned, but there was a hotel out in the Western United States that I had an opportunity to stay in a few years back. And it looked like it was out of Central Casting. It looked like the Stanley, you know, it wasn't exactly built the same way, but it had that, you know, it was built around 1900 and they had beautiful old ledgers from the 20s in a display case out front. And it was the same name. So it hadn't been corporatized and all of that. So, and it had the original elevator that was like with an operator and the, it was fantastic. And I assume it still is fantastic. But I said, this place has got to have a story. So I did some internet research and when I was there and sure enough, people claimed it was haunted. And I asked one of the staff members, cause I said, well, maybe I could do an interview and talk to somebody while I'm out here. Cause I was out there for an appearance on a program. And, they said, oh no, we really don't get into that much. We don't want to talk about it. So do you find that hotels, I mean, some hotels seem like they would embrace it because they see it as a potential draw. And then other hotels, oh, we're too serious for that, and we don't want to degrade ourselves with that kind of talk. What do you find about hotels and their attitude towards these hauntings?
Yeah, I think most don't really want to be associated with some kind of activity. You're right that some play on it and use it because there is a whole bunch of people who would really like to go and stay in a haunted bedroom.
Tourism.
The number of stories that I had submitted about, you know, we went to stay in the Stanley Hotel and we picked this room because we'd heard about it. So people do this a lot. So plainly there is an aspect to tourism of staying in haunted places, staying in haunted hotels. But the vast majority of them, I don't think particularly welcome it. I mean, I had this experience, and I don't think I told you about it last time, but I had this experience in Rotterdam. I went to a conference in my day job. I was going to a user conference for a software company, and they put me in this hotel, said, oh, you'll love it. It's really nice. It's in the docks. It's a converted warehouse, but it used to be the place where Europeans got on the boat to New York when they were, you know, back in the end of last century, not sure. The end of last century before. And so I said, oh, yeah, it sounds good. And I get there, and I got there quite late at night. So they give me my key. I went up to the room, and the room was done like in a sort of maritime, early 19th century type finish. And I thought, wow, this is pretty interesting. And I put my bag on the bed, and I started to unpack, and I start hearing this strange, it was a cross between a dripping sound and a knocking sound. And it was coming from this huge cupboard wardrobe thing. So I walk over to it and I thought, well, it must be a coat hanger or something inside. So I open it up. And as soon as I touched it, it stopped. And as soon as I walked away, it started again. And after three or four back and forths and couldn't find out what was causing this noise, I was increasingly getting that horrible feeling of being watched that you sometimes get. And the atmosphere was very heavy. So I thought to myself, I'm not staying in this room. So I called down and I said, look, I'm awfully sorry, but I don't think I can stay in this room. There's a funny noise coming from the wardrobe. It's going to drive me nuts. So she said, oh, yes, sir, we'll send somebody up. And I thought, well, that's a silly, strange thing. You know, why not just switch me a room or something? So I waited a few minutes, getting increasingly creeped out by the knocking sound and the increasing sort of, palpable atmosphere in there. You could feel it getting negative. And there's a knock on the door. So I go to the door and it's one of the hotel managers. And I said, yeah, come on in. She said, no, that's all right. I said, no, come on in. She said, no, just pack your stuff. We'll put you in a different room. So I thought, okay. So I packed my stuff and we're walking down the stairs. And I said, well, is there a problem with that room? Well, I probably shouldn't say it, sir, but yeah, we've had issues with other guests in that room. So I said, you mean it's haunted? Oh, no, just issues, the strange noises and a strange atmosphere. And I get the picture. So she was denying that this room had a problem, but she wouldn't set foot in it.
Right, exactly. Well, let me ask you, because I think of, and you cover many of these places in this book, different kinds of places, workplaces, hotels, churches, historical homes, those kind of things. Why do you, I've heard the theory a lot of times, places that are most likely to be, quote, haunted are places where there's a lot of energy. In other words, a lot of emotion, strong emotion, hospitals, for lack of a better phrase, insane asylums, they're historically known as theaters, which is one that's interesting to me because, you know, show people are high strung and have a lot of emotion and they're pouring themselves out on the stage, negative comedy and drama, both sides of the fence. And hospitals, obviously, it seems like there's a place where there's a lot of emotion wrapped up in them I've always heard tend to be the most haunted. Do you agree with that?
Yes, I do. I think everything is energy. I mean, even E equals MC squared. I mean, energy equals mass times a constant squared. So everything's energy. Everything vibrates. It's either, you know, if you go into quantum physics, it's neither a particle nor a wave, but it can be one or the other, depending on who's observing and at what time and that kind of thing. So everything's energy. And I think that, as we talked earlier, there are entities that basically utilize negative human energy, I think, to stay in existence. And I think that emotional energy is a very real thing, particularly if it's pain-based, fear-based, sexually repressed or violence-based. These are very, very deep, very strong energies. And I think that it can attract paranormal activity because that energy becomes the source, the feeder for that activity. And I think that, you know, somewhere like a mental hospital or a World War I hospital facility where there were plainly lots of people suffering and probably not treated that well by modern standards, there's going to be lots of residual energy there. And that residual energy can be picked up and utilized by whatever entities are in that vicinity, whether it be a person who's passed on but refuses to move on, or some thought form that's been created in the minds of people and has managed to basically break free and become an independent entity in its own right. And I believe that that can happen. Or it's something a bit more sinister that has an independent existence and is certainly not human, like a demon, for example. And that energy is what they use to manifest. And it's what in manifesting, if they do that to you and they get fear, then you're actually feeding them. You're keeping them going. And I think that's what it's all about. That's my theory.
Interesting theory. One of the things that I think is, and we don't hear as much about this as haunted homes. You have a section here called Roads and Country Lanes. And I just have this vision here in the States, you know, driving down a 2-lane road with really no illumination. You just got the car headlights. Then you've got the radio toned on, and let's go back about 20 years for this. You've got the radio turned on with Art Bell and Coast to Coast AM. I can't think of much more that's spookier than that. And I remember one time when I was a kid, we were driving through the countryside at nighttime. All of a sudden, Johnny Cash comes on the radio, AM radio, I'll say, with Ghost Riders in the Sky. And I thought that was pretty creepy, too. So I've always felt that that those 2-lane highways or country roads or even, you know, older roads in Europe and things, those could be some of the most spooky. What did you find about those?
Yeah, I mean, I was in the UK a couple of years ago on a magical weekend, basically with some magical colleagues connecting with the land and visiting some castles and old stone circles and things like this. And we were up in the northeast of England. And I went over to a couple of the hotel for like a nightcap and a cup of coffee and sit chit chat. And it got quite late till about 1 a.m. I had to go. And I only had a short drive. But if you can imagine almost a single track lane with essentially like brick dry stone walls on either side up to about 8 feet covered in heavy growth and really windy, so you could never actually get any speed up. Right. And it really, really freaked me out because as you're driving along, you need full beam headlights in order to really see where you're going. And it's pitch black and things jump out at you because of the way the full beam headlights work as you go around corners.
Right.
And I tell you, it was like a 10-minute drive. And by the time I got back to my hotel, the sweat was pouring down my back. And I'm not usually scared. And I think it was the setting, you know, it was a part of, we'd been spending the day in that part of the country looking at castles and talking about battles and all these sort of ideas of magic and reality. And with all of that and the conversation that we'd had over coffee in the back of my mind, and then put me in that environment, especially as I drove past the castle ruins, I was like, oh my God, any minute now, something's going to pop out in front of me, like an apparition or even if it were just a horse, a real horse or something, it's going to scare the living daylights out of me. So that kind of an environment, I think, is really conducive to having an experience which can be very, very scary indeed. And I would literally hate to have an experience under those circumstances, I think. I think that would really scare me. And, you know, there's lots of people have driving along a road and hitchhikers or that disappear or apparitions that they run down, think they've actually hit somebody but didn't feel any bump and get out and look for this person and there's nobody there. People looking to cross the road that suddenly disappear when you get on top of them. I mean, all of these kinds of stories exist and people have experienced them and, you know, good on them, because I wouldn't like to have that kind of an experience, and that's for sure.
And a note on the UK, the thing that's interesting to me, there really is a difference. I mean, things are over here, if they're 100 years old, they're old. If they're 100 years old over in the UK, they're just getting started. And we went over there in 2019. Unfortunately, it's the only time I've gotten to go. But we got to stay for a couple of weeks, and it was just remarkable. The history was remarkable, you know. You're standing in front of a 1,000-year-old wall.
Oh yeah.
So,
but I mean, I spent 20 years in the States too, and you know, driving through Arizona at 1 o'clock in the morning, it ain't too much fun either, because there it's like, again, it's raw rock. And it's very, very dark. There's, you know, you can drive for miles without a light, a natural light. And in those kind of environments, it's not just, I'm not just worried about, you know, am I going to see something that I shouldn't be seeing in terms of a ghost or something like that, but am I going to see a UFO? Because in that kind of an environment, that remoteness and that big sky, you start thinking of aliens and UFOs and abductions, at least I do. So, you know, for me, the US might, we went to Galveston and everybody was, you know, wow, Galveston, it's like 1905. And I'm thinking to myself, well, yeah, my grandfather was, you know, living in 1905. What's the big fuss? You know, I routinely, you know, visit castles that were built by the Normans or the Saxons, you know, around right. a thousand years ago. Yep. There's a huge difference, but that doesn't mean that, you know, the US still can be pretty damn scary, if you'll excuse the expression. The number of stories I get, particularly around Oklahoma, Texas, you know, the sort of central south area that involve black-eyed kids and, you know, strange occurrences that just driving along. There's a beautiful story I got where couple of driving along and they took a slightly different route because they were sick of using the highway. And they came across a gas station and thought, well, we better fill up because we're getting a little low. And they pull into this gas station and they start to think, well, this is a bit of a strange gas station. It's kind of old fashioned. And the wife gets out and she goes into the store and she's looking at old Coca-Cola bottles, you know, still filled. She's thinking, well, I haven't seen a Coke bottle like that in donkey's years. Then she starts realizing everything's covered in cobwebs and, you know, there's a musty smell, and she gets creeped out. So she goes outside and she finds this young boy talking to her husband saying, why don't you take me fishing? Please take me fishing. And the husband's saying, well, I'm trying to fill my car and we're going somewhere and I really don't have time to take fishing. And the little boy starts to get angrier and angrier. You know, you must take me fishing. And eventually they pay and drive out the place like bat out of hell, not looking in the rearview mirror. And they pull into a cafe about 2 miles up the road. And they're a bit shaken. They order a coffee and sit there. And the waitress comes over and they say, you know, are you from these parts? Yes, said the waitress. There's a gas station a couple of miles down. No, there's no gas station. What do you mean there's no gas station? We just stop there. No, yeah. There's no gas station. No gas station for miles. I mean, that's a scary experience.
Yes, absolutely. And then you get these really weird things like these portals or places that don't exist. And we've heard this stories too. They're fascinating. Well, it's always great to talk to G. Michael Vasey. And just for fun, I double checked and indeed he was right. We hadn't talked since 2017 and he could have knocked me over with a feather, but we will fix that. It will not be so long if Michael will come on the show. Where can people find your books and more information about your podcast and your blog and everything you do? Because really a lot of fun to chat with you today.
Yeah, I have a website, GaryMVasey.com, and there you'll find all the books and links to podcasts and all kinds of music and all kinds of stuff. And I blog now at GaryMVasey.net, which is a WordPress site, and it gets much better distribution, you know, for blogging than a normal hosted website. So GaryMVasey.com is where you'll find the information, .net. I do all kinds of blog articles on magic and connecting with the land in the Czech Republic, the Slavic gods and goddesses and all that kind of stuff. And all my books are available on the Amazon websites as well. Just put in G. Michael Vasey and hit search and you should find me.
Very good. Very good. Well, our guest today has been G. Michael Vasey, and we've been talking about his recent book, and certainly do check it out. We enjoy what he does, and you will too. It's called True Tales of Haunted Places. Thank you so much for joining us today, sir.
No problem. Enjoyed it. Thank you.
And thank you for tuning in to Ghost Insight. We'll talk to you next time, and we thank you so much for listening. Stay safe and stay spooky. Bye-bye.